Hello, friends, and welcome to episode 90 of the CU Insight Experience. So this episode is brought to you by our friends at PSCU. As the nation's premier payments CUSO, PSCU proudly supports the success of more than 1,500 credit unions. My name is Randy Smith. I'm one of the co-founders of CUinsight.com, and it is my job on the show to have conversations with the best and the brightest of the credit union community. I get to pick their brains and see if we can't find a few nuggets that we can all learn from. My guest on today's show is Victor Coro. Victor is the president and CEO of Coopera and one of the founding members of the DEI Collective. I knew Victor and I would have a lot of fun in this conversation. The biggest challenge we were going to face was not making this a travel podcast this week. A couple of wanderlusts on lockdown for the past few months. Travel still made its way into the conversation from time to time, but we talked a ton about credit unions and the challenges faced with all the disruption going on. We talked about why diversity, equity, and inclusion is so important and how credit unions can be the leader in this space. Victor also shared with us his path to where he is today and the leadership lessons he's picked up along the way. I took a few notes that I know I'll be thinking about and thinking on going forward. As always, we had some fun, wrapped it up with the rapid fire questions to wrap up the show. Victor's answer to the memorable trouble question cracked me up, but I am sure his father is still not laughing at that one. I knew this conversation would be a ton of fun. It was another one of those where we just kept talking even after we stopped recording. I think you're really going to enjoy this and take some nuggets that will make you think as well. I know I did. So without further ado, I give you my conversation with Victor Coro. Enjoy. Victor, welcome to the show.
Hey, how are you?
I am doing well. Interesting times we're living through, my friend. It gives us a lot to talk about, that's for sure. You know, I have to start here. You and I are both love to travel, love to take the yeah. pictures while traveling. And it's been a long time, I'm guessing, since either one of us has been someplace new. Any hacks out there for your fellow wanderlust just to stay sane?
Go back and look at your pictures. That's what I do all the time. And when I start getting a little bit nostalgic or it just really tugs my heartstrings, I stop. Yeah. But, you know, it's a reminder that things will get better and then I'll get back there again. And,
absolutely.
You know, read about places that you always wanted to go and, you know, be informed about them. So when this is over and you can travel again, then you just go.
I keep getting asked the question, and I'm sure you do too, from friends, like, where's the first place you want to go once this is all over with? And I'm like, wherever will let us in, just any place. Right. I want to get out there again. So, but more on to the credit union side of things. You know, one of the topics that I've tried to keep front and center on the show is DEI. Obviously, it's something around our house. Jill and I speak of often since she founded Humanity. But between Coopera and the DEI Collective, I mean, you're all around this space as well. If you could, tell our listeners, you know, why is this work so important, not only for credit unions, but, I mean, why credit unions should be the leader in this space?
Well, our mission really is to include and to provide access to those who don't have it. So in the end, it's inclusion. And so connecting that mission to everyone is what we should be doing. And so it's important to really be intentional and to be aware of people that you may be excluding unintentionally. And so this is why, you know, we're in the business of inclusion and we need to do inclusion. It's the simplest concept that I have come up with to explain this.
Could you talk to me about the DEI Collective? That's a newer organization. I know you're trying to get the word out. I think it's amazing. Just a little love there for the people. We'll link to it in the show notes so everybody can find it and join and be a part of it.
I appreciate that. And the collective, it's been a labor of love. That's what I call it. And basically started at an actual, the American Association of Credit Union Leagues, you know, in Orange County, probably a year and a half ago now, almost 2 years.
I remember that.
And I find myself on a stage with Angela Russell and Samira Salem. Angela's from CUNA Mutual and Samira is from CUNA. And then Maurice Smith. And at that point, he was the chairman of CUNA. And then we were on a panel talking about diversity, equity, and inclusion. It happened to be probably the third or fourth panel that, you know, us three find ourselves in. And, you know, Maurice opened the conversation to the room of probably 200, 300 people there. And he was like, well, let's look around this room and see how much diversity we have. It was telling, not much diversity in that room other than the folks on the stage.
Yep.
And that was, for me, that was kind of like a wake-up call. And I've known this for years, that one of the disconnects in the United States is how the decision-making in the industry is as compared to the population, when our population is about 40% multicultural. And then we have boards and C-suite in our industry that are 90% white. There's obviously a disconnect. Yep. And that was kind of like the catalyst for me to actually call upon a meeting in Madison, you know, a couple of weeks later to say, hey, you know, Inclusive, your Caribbean partner, Feline, CUDA Mutual, you know, we all do something about diversity and inclusion. And we had the lunch, probably there were 8, 9, 10 of us there. And we went around the table, basically said, oh, yeah, I'm doing this. And yeah, I'm doing analytics and I'm doing white papers. And so what we found is a great number of resources, expertise, and, you know, goodwill to push for diversity, equity, and inclusion. But we were not collaborating. We were not putting this together anywhere that would be easy for any credit union to find. And so that's how the collective really got started. And now you would see about, I believe there are 15 organizations that, you know, started it. And those are the founding members, obviously, you know, Humanity and Jill to part of it. And, you know, after that lunch, we went in a mission to search for all of us in the Caribbean family, that's what I call it, who talk about diversity, equity, and inclusion. And the door is still open for, you know, more organizations that work in this space. Again, it's really thinking, who are we excluding to make sure that we include them? And, you know, that's how the collective got started. And then we're just in the first phase of what's to come.
Yeah, absolutely. I look forward to seeing where this thing can grow. What advice do you have for, you mentioned the board diversification, you mentioned the C-suite, for the people that are already in those positions that are doing the hiring, that are recruiting new board members? Do you have any advice on, you know, how to make the boards and the C-suites look more representative of the community?
Really, to have a plan. Okay. If you strategically know that you're lacking diversity, just thinking about diversity is not going to bring it. So, you know, you do really have to have a strategic plan to really hold up a mirror to yourself and say, is my decision-making structure, meaning the board, the C-suite, reflective of the community in which establish or that I attempt to serve?
Yep.
And if that doesn't hold true, really be curious about how you bring that diversity. There are many ways to bring diversity, you know, longer than this podcast would last, but, right. You know, and there are many resources out there in credit union land already. So be curious, read, learn about those things, but do not only worry about or mind diversity, also mind the most important thing, which is inclusion. Once you have all this diverse perspective, do they feel welcome to actually add to your mission, to what you're doing? So that's an important perspective there.
I will only speak for myself, but that's something that I've learned quite a bit over the past year or so. I used to say something, and I think a lot of us did this, where it was like, when we bring in new employees, we talk about the CU Insight way.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, well, that's not giving, I mean, people, you want different opinions and you want you know, not people to think that you just, so it's been something that I could tell you over the past year, I was being very intentional to stop saying that. Like, that's right. Just not, I think there's a difference between that and culture and everything. So, you know, we will link to all of that and I'll have you send me over some links to, you know, some resources to get people started. That'll all be in the show notes. I'd like to pivot a little bit. And this was something I know you and I have talked about in the past, but it's been such an interesting time, is all the disruption that's going on in financial services overall. I've been, I mean, historically, credit unions have moved fairly slow. Like, it's not, I don't think I'm saying anything that would shock people, but over the past few months, you know, during this global pandemic, we've seen organizations move very fast. I guess, what's the biggest changes? You work with credit unions all across the country. What are the biggest changes you've seen in credit unions? And, you know, to add on to that, is there something you think we need to do better to stay relevant with all the disruption that is going on?
I would say, you know, remain flexible. If anything, this pandemic has shown us, hey, you know, as of tomorrow, you cannot work here, you know, physically in a branch or in a building. And so within 2 weeks, probably 90% of the industry had adjusted to that. But if you go back in time and then think about all of the barriers or the mental breaks that were there to say, no, this is not possible, until a crisis showed up, we then started to be more flexible and creative. So whether, obviously, there's got to be checks and balances and firm policies in place to prevent mayhem. But, you know, that a business model actually needs to remain flexible in order for it to continue. The other thing that I would say is to look into with a lens of inclusivity all the time. And, you know, this has come more and more to the fore in the last 6 months. One of the things that at first we saw the jump to the digital world, obviously we couldn't be in branches. So we had to push all of these services online, on mobile banking and all of that. But one of the things that many credit unions did not think about was, like, what about those people who don't have a cell phone or internet access? What about those who don't speak English? And all of this at first was obviously from a perspective of a person that is able to move and a person that is able to know English. And so, you know, for 2-3 weeks, those consumers that did not have that were basically unintentionally left behind. That's when, you know, it's very important to really always have that perspective. Are we looking from this from all of the perspectives of the folks that we are trying to serve and the folks who already trust us to provide the services? So, you know, those two things I've noticed in the pandemic.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting you bring that up. I have been a part of a CEO group during this whole thing where we just kind of get together, and Maria Martinez, who was a guest on the show, was on that. And I think the perspective she brought early on in the pandemic to some of the, maybe the CEOs in different parts of the country, was really eye-opening, because, like, she may deal with it more down at border federal credit union, but everybody's dealing with that in any community, right? So I thought it, what you're saying there makes so much sense to me. I had a question for you, you know, Victor, directly as a leader. You know, how has it changed the way that you and your team at Cupera work?
Well, we are in a search for an abundance of patience. You know? If you could buy it, you know, I would order it. It's been really interesting to, you know, to be patient. Flexibility, that's another word that I have basically embraced myself. And acceptance, that's another one. You know, we want to have everything as it was before, but it's not going back to that. And pause. Usually I'm a person that, you know, likes, and this is how probably my team sees me, you know, I just want to solve things really fast. But now it's like, okay, let's just pause for a minute and then weigh different ways to do this or viewpoints. And so I have actually written this, I have it on a sticky note: patience, pause, flexibility, and acceptance.
Ah. So I might need to copy your sticky note. Slap it right up here on mine as well. Jeez. Yeah. No, that's just,
I could be impatient. I can go fast. I can be flexible, and I just don't want to accept the new reality. And so I have to be reminded of that right in front of my face. Otherwise, you know, frustration comes.
If we could see people out there listening to this, I think a bunch of people are going to be writing that down and other sticky notes out there. So the last question in this section, if we were to sit down a year from now, what are you most proud of that you and your team have accomplished? I keep saying break out the crystal ball. I know that's very foggy right now, or smoke filled for most of us, but what are you going to be proud of a year from now?
I will be proud to basically instill in our industry, in credit unions and financial industries, a lens of inclusivity.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's a new language that we're all adopting now, but that's what we have been doing for 15 years at Copera.
Yeah.
If credit unions actively start using analytics to really see who they're serving, what, and if it's the Hispanic market, that's our expertise.
Yep.
But the Hispanic market, you cannot treat this market as one homogeneous big market. You know, the Hispanics come from, you know, 20 plus countries in Latin America. They may prefer English. They may prefer Spanish. They may be completely bilingual. If they're first, second, third generation, they behave differently.
Yeah.
If they live with the parents, if they learn Spanish at home, all of these variables are very important to know. So Koreans really need to do that segmentation analytics test or just study that. And not only with Hispanic consumers, but all sorts of consumers. And what we're trying to do is not for the consumer to adapt to the credit union. It's the other way around. The credit union adapt to the, you know, to the market. And the other thing is really, truly do an examination, and I'm using like the regulator's term here, but really... Look at yourself and really think, am I providing services to those who do not have an option for services? So if mostly you see the consumers that you're serving, if they could go to two, three other credit unions or three other banks, what about those who cannot even get into your doors?
Yeah.
So, you know, and that, I think that's what we were founded as an industry. And sometimes we get that perspective lost in the shuffle. And, you know, you got to have an advocate internally saying, what about those who have barriers to enter here? Is everyone welcome here?
That's a great point.
And sometimes that's a hard exercise to do, because we all want to believe that we're doing well, that we're including, that we are fulfilling our mission. But is it really true?
Yeah, that's, you know? I love your point there, to have somebody that, you know, is the advocate that is going to ask that question, you know, with many, you know, the decisions that we make day to day. I'd like to move on to the second part of the show, the leadership and life hacks. What inspired you? You just were talking about Copera. What inspired you to take the gig as president and CEO over there?
To use a euphemism, an abrupt career shift.
That happens often to many of us, right?
That happened often to many of us, and it was completely unexpected. But my biggest fear when that happened was that I was not going to be able to work in this industry,
yeah,
which I had already been 20 years. And now I'm like 23 years deep. So I'm a lifer in credit unions, that you can say.
It sucks us in.
it does. And, you know, I think the most interesting part of all of this was why it hurt so much when I was no longer at that place, is because my parents in Panama started a credit union themselves.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, been in this thing for most of my adult life now. And, you know, was so fortunate to find an opportunity right away at Copera. You know, it was like all starts align. And then I transitioned to Copera. And I actually was part of Copera 15 years ago when the Iowa League started that business. I did a little bit of consulting for them when they were trying to get that business off the ground. So it came full circle.
So now we know you ended up there. But since you've been there, how has the inspiration changed at all with time on the job as you've really gotten into it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I've been studying the industry. You know, I used to work at Worldcon, so what I was. And we used to do kind of like deep dives into what would prevent a particular credit union movement in a country to thrive. And in the United States, it was always, you know, this disconnect between the fastest growing demographic, which is multicultural market, and particularly Hispanic market, and, you know, the way that the credit union system was attracting new consumers. So there's that disconnect that was always apparent to me. And it was that shift from working internationally to working nationally that at first it was like, well, will I like this?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I was for a couple of months, you know, very honestly, like, am I going to like this? But then I discovered so much that there is to do in this system here in the United States, you know, the opportunity that's there for credit unions to include and to really do good and fulfill their mission, that it just gave me that wanting to work, you know, wanting to do good things. because, you know, a mission, this is such a mission-driven industry that it's just fun to work in it.
Yeah. Often we, even some of the development work that I've been a part of, people look to the U.S. for leadership and, you know, because of the kind of the rich history. But everyone I've ever talked to who's been, whether it's to, you know, South or Central America, or if it's been to Africa or Europe or wherever it happens to be, you bring more back than you actually take that, right? So the idea that you worked globally and you know some of the things that work, to be able to bring that to the U.S. system too, I think it's got to be an awesome perspective, right?
It was a really good perspective. You know, for probably 15 years at World Council, I headed much of the overseas exchange programs that World Council did. So from a partnership program to actually, I think I got 3 different State Department grants that would take young people from the United States who work at credit unions and actually place them in different credit unions, you know, in Brazil, in the Dominican Republic, in Guatemala, in Eastern Europe. And then actually, you know, doing so many also lobbying missions to foreign governments with leagues in the United States. And then, you know, the most interesting part was, like, every time the Americans would tell me, you know, in general, you know, we thought that we knew it all, but the rich experience that we've gotten and to see that mission of, you know, these organizations overseas that have so few resources change communities and enrich lives, it was so inspiring. Yeah. And to this day, that's probably been my favorite thing to do in this space. That exchange thing.
I couldn't agree with you more. I feel like I spent some time in Kenya last year, and mm-hmm. I learned more from George Mbado and his team at Akaska than I mean, ever could. And they wanted me there. I'm like, oh, I feel like I'm learning from you. Back to one of my favorite questions. Is there something that your team has heard you say so many times that they could finish your sentence?
It's doable.
It's doable. I love it. I love it. I love it. And I think I am making a note here because I have an idea what the name of this episode is going to be. So that's awesome. Sometimes, and I know this is something that's come up a lot for many of us over the past few months in particular, but as a leader, you have to make that difficult decision. Sometimes it may not be the popular one. Is this something you've always had the ability to do, or is that something that you've kind of had to grow over years to become a better leader?
I have to grow over the years that, you know, my nature is to be an ambassador, a person that puts people together, a person that sees a lot of perspective and is very self-aware. So for me to say no, for me to really contradict an opinion point, it's tough. It takes out of me. And so I have to make myself do that. And obviously, you know, those are one of the things that I have learned to some degree in all of these years, in a 25-year career, and I'm still not good at it. It takes a lot out of me to do that, but luckily I have not encountered that too much.
Yeah, right. Not an everyday thing. Is there a common myth about being a good leader that you would just like to debunk?
You should know it all. Yeah. You know, you have all the answers.
Right.
No. I think being humble and admitting that, you know, you need a lot of people around you to make good decisions and to really push for positive things is essential. Obviously, as a leader, you need to set an example, but you have to be humble enough to admit that you don't know everything.
You don't have all the answers. That is true. I think that's one of the, I often wonder to myself, is that something we learn with age and experience, or is it something that, you know, you just have to touch that stove a few times?
I think so. I think when you're young, you're pushed to show and to defend your worth.
Yep.
Whereas, you know, as you grow old, like myself, I'm like, well, you know, I'm sure people just know that I don't know at all. So might as well admit it and then ask for their help.
Absolutely. When you think back to earlier in your career, and maybe this is kind of what we're just talking about, is there a mistake that you made or you know, one that you see young leaders make often?
I think, I think of this often, and it was when, you know, I worked in several places, even before credit unions. And it was that always lure of travel internationally that drove me, right? But sometimes travel was there, but the passion was gone of what I was doing. And I think I should have pushed myself more to look for something else. So keep an open mind and think that there are other opportunities out there. Everything is not final, the last word. And, I think that's a wisdom that comes with years. When I was young, I don't think I thought that way, but now I do. You know, if this is no longer inspiring me to get up and do something, why?
Find something that is, right?
Right.
I agree with you, my friend. Has there been a piece of advice or a life lesson that you received that you find yourself going back to, you know, over and over in your career?
Yeah, I think it's just, I started my professional career in Panama. That's where I was from. I came here to study at the University of Wisconsin. And after I graduated, I went back to Panama for years. I worked for a Korean company. It was basically pause. That's something that my boss used to tell me all the time. And that Asian culture, they have a very thoughtful way to do things. And then it's a collective culture. And then usually they would be asking, would this benefit the whole community or the whole group? Or rather, would it benefit only you? So, you know, that's all I think. I always carry that with me.
That's funny. And the pause is on your sticky note as well. So,
right? And then you come back to the United States, which is, you know, is rugged individualism. That's kind of like our thing here. And, you know, there's always that, you know, push and, you know, find self-reliance and be sufficient and then go up, but in a way that is yourself.
Yep.
Not so much from a collective way to see things. So I think that has always helped me, you know, be a natural ambassador. That's always been my role.
You know, one of the things I noticed in the first season of the podcast was how many of the leaders on the show talked about mentors who helped shape them. Is this something that your career and you personally have benefited from as well, or?
For sure. I don't know if we ever established this as an official mentorship, but, you know, I have a phone a friend, which is Pat Jury, and he used to be the CEO of the Iowa League, and, you know, he was a board of the World Council. You know, it's a person that I've known now for, geez, probably 18 years. You know, it's a person that I have relied over the years for counsel, for advice, for, you know, talking me off a ledge. You know?
Hey, we all need those. Yeah,
we all need those, right? Yep. You know, it's really good to know that you have this person that you can always phone a friend, you know, you can always rely upon. I want to believe that I have played that role for him as well. But, you know, it's really, really good to have that relationship. And that's a person that if you ask me, hey, you ever had a mentor, that would be him.
That's who comes to mind. You know, before we move on to the last part of the show, if you have a free day, there's nothing on the calendars. What passions do you have outside of credit unions? What does Victor do to recharge?
Well, up until COVID, it was probably, you know, I mean, I've been to, I was hoping that this year I would visit my 100th country. So far, friend, I visited 90.
I'm half you. So yeah, I'm I love it.
So, you know, again, in a span of basically 30 years, that has been my passion to travel. And I never set foot in a big plane until I was 20, almost 20, when I came to study in the States. But from there, obviously working at World Council and working on different international settings, I always made a point to learn and to actually be present in different societies that or countries. That really opens one's mind, I believe. And for me, just to be in a strange place where I cannot relate to anything is actually invigorating because I have to navigate it. I have to function. And, you know, to me, a lot of people say, oh my God, that is so scary. I go, no, that's where I'm probably most at ease for whatever reason. And that actually allows me to disconnect from anything. So I do travel and photography, I take lots of pictures, lots of interesting angles, but I think it just comes from the wanting to understand, you know, others. And the conclusion is that we all kind of want the same thing.
Absolutely.
You know, we want good food. We want to eat. We want shelter. We want the best for our families. We want to be accepted. We want love. Yeah. And, you know, no matter what country you've been to, that's the constant. We're all human.
It always is. So I spent years trying to make this, you know, kind of location independent life, right? And I remember, I think it was in Orange County, that trip that we were all out there for. That you mentioned earlier in the show, when we were riding back to the airport, and one of the things you said that I absolutely loved was, like, I was looking at travel as trying to, you know, longer trips where I could immerse myself more. And I remember, I think you had been talking about Iceland, and you were kind of like, had broke it into quadrants. And even so, even if you just went for a few days, you knew you could go back. And I remember going, right, I can go back any place, you know, so it doesn't have to be 2 weeks or a month to go do this. It, you know, even if it's a shorter term, I looked at that in a much different way. So I appreciate that, my friend. You changed my mind. So I've always remembered that. Now I'm just ready to go do it again. So the last part of the show, the rapid fire questions, the questions are rapid. Your answers do not have to be. So you mentioned Panama, where you grew up. What were you like in high school? Do you remember? And do you remember that first time you got into some memorable trouble?
You know, I was studious. I was the valedictorian in my high school, but also got into mischief. I remember for our graduation, I asked my dad, can I take your Jeep to the beach? No, you know, obviously the Pacific Ocean in Panama has really marked tides, high and low. And we were partying and, you know, walking on the beach and whatever it is. And then just, you know, being a 17-year-old. And I forgot the Jeep at the low tide.
Oh,
when we came back from our hide, my Jeep, my dad's Jeep, which was our only car, was floating.
Oh, okay. That is some memorable trouble there. That's one of my favorites. Holy smokes. Okay. I have to ask, how did your dad react to the floating Jeep?
I had to use my mother as the kind of, you know, messenger. He had to put a whole new engine in it. And, you know, this was a 1971 Jeep in 1980, whatever. I'm not going to tell you the year, but it was epic.
That is a fantastic story. So, you know, we mentioned it earlier, right? Like we just, most of us stumbled into careers in credit unions in one way or another. Back in high school, you're the valedictorian. What'd you want to be when you grew up?
You know, I think I wanted to be a pilot. That's what I wanted to be. But again, I'm growing up in rural Panama and I don't know how I would have done that. So that was a dream. That was just a dream.
Yeah. But well, now you've gotten to spend a bunch of time on planes, just not flying them. Right. So do you have any daily routines that you do that if you don't, your day just feels off?
One word, coffee.
Coffee.
Oh my gosh. If I don't have coffee, I just can't. I really can't. And again, when I used to travel a lot, that's one of the things that I used to buy a lot.
Yep.
Coffee from different countries and then, you know, do a lot of research ahead of time and then just go and buy a little bit.
Yeah.
So I could bring it home and then have that experience, you know, that will draw me back, as you said about Iceland.
I absolutely love that. We actually brought back coffee from Vietnam and, you know, went and bought the actual little makers that they use there and everything. And it 100%, it takes you back to that. It takes more time to make it. Do you have a favorite coffee? Where's the one that you're like, I need to get back there just to get some? Is there one?
Well, right now I'm craving Panama because I just can't even get there.
Yeah, that's true.
It's really good. It's really good coffee there, but really it would taste like home, you know.
Right. Absolutely.
I've been here 30 years, I still call Panama home.
Absolutely. Just can't even imagine. This is it's interesting times, as we said to start the show. The random question, what's that best album of all time, that one you can listen to without skipping a song?
Joshua Tree from U2.
You and I are about the same age, I think. So,
actually, that's how I learned English, you know, singing. And really, I was always very curious about the lyrics of albums. And, you know, in my high school years, popular music was American music in English in Panama for whatever reason. Right now it's completely different. It's only Spanish reggaeton, but back there it was, you know, 80s music.
Yeah.
Now I reveal my age. But anyway, that's how I, you know, I learned a lot of English and got to really understand grammar through music, lyrics.
You know, a few years back, I went to a Spanish school in Costa Rica, and I was having a hard time, you know, putting things together. And one of the exercises that the instructor gave me was to go watch YouTube videos of songs that I knew. So like songs that were originally English. So she talked about like, listen to a Beatles song that's sung in Spanish.
Right.
So yeah, it gave me a bunch of likes. And so it's interesting that music helped you with the English as well. So as you know, Jill and I are both readers. We have stacks of books around the house. Many have been recommended to us by people on the show. Do you have a book that you've either gifted others or that book that you just think everybody should read?
You know, I'll make a confession. I do not. And I am a massive consumer of media, but I like to read things that are shorter.
Okay.
Harvard Business Review, that sort of thing. And I like to, if I delve into a topic, I like to find two or three perspectives on that topic and then really form my opinion that way. I've tried books before, Randy, but I just don't know if I have that attention span anymore. I just don't finish them.
I will tell you, I've always been a reader, but I sure do like audiobooks now. For some reason, they seem to keep my attention span longer. So as you've gotten older, what's become more important to you? And in my favorite part of this question, what's become less important?
More important, I think, is a connection with family. You know, obviously, travel has always been for me a way to enrich my mind. But at the same time, you leave a family behind. You know, as I get older, I thought, well, maybe I should combine both. Travel with my family. Obviously, that's not the case now. But really, that seek that connection with kids and wife and, you know, extended family has been very important. Least important, you know, I would say what people think of me. You know, remember, you know, you go through the stages in life, and in high school, it's like, you know, what would so and so think of me doing this, that, or the other? They can think whatever they want. I'm me, and I'm not going to change now. And, you know, as long as I have a good moral compass and I know that I'm doing good, that's that.
So there's a question that I did not send you. When you hear the word success, who is the first person that pops in your mind?
I would say my dad.
How come?
He had very little education, but, you know, became a teacher, you know, founded a credit union. He was a union leader in Panama in the time that you shouldn't be, because you could have got killed.
Yeah.
And, you know, has always been a person that taught us the right thing. Never owe money, you know, always save before he spend. And so, you know, with such little education and access to resources, he was able to forge a good life, you know, good family life, still married to my mom. And then he has three kids, you know, myself, a CEO, my sister, a dentist, and my brother, a chemist. Wow. And, you know,
education was obviously important to him.
Education was very important for them. And they, my mom and dad, have been through all their lives. And I think the three of us, three brother and my sister, we all love to teach. And, you know, this is something that I like also about Coopera, you know, sharing knowledge and making people see things from, you know, analytics and insights and all of that. So I think my dad really was pivotal in instilling all of those in us.
That's a beautiful answer and a great way to wrap up the show. The last question that I have of you, because I appreciate you coming on today, my friend, and sharing your story. Do you have any final asks of our listeners or final thoughts you'd like to share?
I would say, think about the sustainability, think about how can our industry can relate to our population that's here now and will be around our branches and digital channels 5, 10, 15 years from now. We are at a pivotal moment that we have seen inequalities being brought and centered that have been in our societies for centuries. Some people are just finding out about these inequalities and this systemic problems that actually make some people thrive and then make some people always stay behind. So the more that we can connect our mission to include and to provide services and to really lift up people so everybody can be more, it would be a good thing. And obviously, this is a very complicated thing, but it's doable.
Absolutely. I appreciate that. I think that is the perfect way to wrap this up. We will link to everything we talked about today in the show notes. If people want to get a hold of you, they have additional questions of you, what's your preferred method? LinkedIn, the Twitter machine, email?
Actually, LinkedIn is pretty good. Yep. I share a lot there.
Well, we will link to that. You know, make sure people can get a hold of you. Thank you again, Victor, for being on the show. I hope you stay healthy, my friend, and have an amazing day.
You too. Thank you so much for the opportunity. And, you know, keep up the good work.
Before we go, I'd like to pass along a huge thank you to all of you for listening. We couldn't do what we do if it weren't for all of you. So thank you from the bottom of my heart. Once again, thank you to Victor for taking the time out of his schedule to share his experiences with all of us. And a big old thank you to our sponsor, PSCU. Our friends at PSCU have been longtime partners and supporters of ours at CUinsight.com. So please make sure to click on their link in the show notes and give them some love. See everything they have going on to help out the credit union community. Also, we're on every podcast player out there: Apple, Spotify, Pandora, Stitcher, iHeartRadio. The list goes on. We would appreciate if you would subscribe. You can leave us a 5-star rating, maybe even a review on the old Apple podcast machines. It really does help with the visibility of the show. And as always, if you don't think we're worth it, forget I asked. Just reach out to me. Let me know where we can improve. We are all ears. And don't forget about the CU Insight Experience podcast book list. Need some stimulation for the old mind? We've got you covered. Get your next book recommendation from the guests on our show. Thank you all again for listening. Have a great day, and please stay healthy, friends.